The vibration of change. That magical place where life shifts from struggle to ease, from stagnation to forward movement, from old ways of being to new ways of becoming. Yes, it can seem rather elusive to get there, but when you are in it, you feel it down to your very core, and it can positively affect everything in your life, from your relationships to your health and well-being, from your career path to your abundance, from the quality of your inner connection to the fullness of your self-expression. Here on the Christine Upchurch Show, we explore ways to get into that vibration of change with experts in the fields of consciousness, psychology, spirituality, health, healing, and science. Are you ready to step into your vibration of change? Hello, everybody. Welcome. You might be listening live on Facebook Live on my professional page on KKNW AM 1150 in the Seattle area, transformationtalkradio.com. Or perhaps after the fact on dozens of podcasts or on my YouTube channel. And if you go to my YouTube channel, please make sure to subscribe and like. We're getting more and more videos up there these days. So you want to get notified when a new interview goes up or when one of my own personal videos goes up. Anyway, glad to have you here. And I want to say hello to the people behind the technology. Benny at KKNW. Hey, Benny.
Hi, Christine. Happy fall, I should say. Can you smell it? I know I can.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I'm very grateful for is the weather turned a couple of weeks ago. And it was the sort of thing where it's like, okay, it's too early for fall to start. But now we've got sunshine again. No. So, you know, if we can have a sunny autumn, I'm good. Here in the Seattle area, it gets to be sort of like walking this fine line of, oh, I love the changing of the colors of the trees, but I really, really don't want to have rain for the next 9 months.
Yeah, it just keeps you on the edge of your seat sometimes. That's all.
Yes. And hello to Jacob behind the scenes at TTR. Hey, Jacob.
Hey, Christine. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you too. And I'm grateful we've got a guest here today. And his name is J. Stuart Dixon. He's a spiritual seeker, a finder, a teacher. He teaches based on his direct experience. So in other words, he likes to walk his talk and then talk about it, as opposed to just talking about it and not walking his talk. He's had 29 years of interaction with numerous Zen unorthodox teachers. He helps people discover that badass inside of them that will help you get out of that brutal cycle that many of us find ourselves in, the feeling stuck, the same old, the monotony that leaves us yearning for something more. And he's got, he has been interviewed by Rick Archer on Buddha at the Gas Pump. He was a meditation editor of the Mind, Body, Spirit blog, All Things Healing, was a board member of Seven Oaks Retreat Center, and is the owner founder of a tech design and install firm called Charlottesville Audio Visual Services. So he's actually living in the 3D as well as the 5D. I'd like to welcome our guest today, J. Stuart Dixon. Hey, Stuart.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, nice to have you here. And, you know, I love that you were referring to spirituality as being a badass, because I think that so many in the spiritual realm focus on the fluff, the seriousness, feels good. And it's really important to ground that higher frequency vibration, that connection to that other realm, into our everyday lives.
Yeah.
Why do you like to call people who do that badass?
Well, I think the ability to, or the willingness or the courage to confront shadow, which is what we're talking about, to accept a lot of the bad things that we don't necessarily want to accept, that we might push away, that we might deny, to do that, to have the courage to do that, that's totally badass. That's you know, riding the roller coaster all the way to the top. That's you jumping off the cliff. That's you jumping out of the airplane with a parachute. To really courageously dive deep into one's shadow, one's limitations, one's Edge is just a completely badass thing to do. Simple as that.
And I think that there are people in the consciousness realm who think that we should just be able to transcend that, as opposed to getting dirty and rolling in the mud and facing those aspects of ourselves. Sure. Can you tell us a little bit about your own personal journey?
Sure. So what you're talking about there is commonly referred to as spiritual bypassing.
Yeah.
And you wonderfully summed it up in your little pamphlet, which is called The Downside to Seeking. And I have a whole chapter in Spirituality for Badasses that also talks about spiritual bypassing. And so my own experience of this is pretty typical of most people. There's nothing wrong with spiritual bypassing. Let me say that first of all. It's going to happen. When you're new to spirituality, isn't it a natural inclination? Life is clamped you down. Life is put you in a situation where not everything is going the way that you had expected or hoped it would go. Negative things might be happening. You're feeling frustrated, you're feeling lonely, you're feeling anger, whatever the case might be. Of course you're gonna wanna experience the lighter side of things. You're gonna wanna experience the positive side of things. You're gonna wanna like get rid of the bad and head towards the good. It's a completely natural human disposition. However, what you learn, the sort of what you're sold, of course, in a lot of spirituality is to just think positive thoughts or just avoid any of the negativity. And you, if you stick around long enough on the journey, you begin to smell a rat, and you learn that just doesn't necessarily work. And so what then begins to happen is that slowly over time, or you get your butt kicked, you mm-hmm. learn to accept the shadow side of your being. You learn to meet these fears, and these might be existential fears. They might be psychological fears that or wounds from your early childhood. So my experience of that was the same. I wanted to climb on the outside of the mountain and puppy dogs and ice cream and all the feel good stuff that we're after. And I had some of that, and that was fine. But you can, and I only did it for so long where again, I began to smell a rat. Like I was like, I'd had these wonderful experiences, whether they, something like an out of body experience or a unitive experience sitting with the teacher. But gnawing in the back of my head and in my heart was this sense of something still off, something I still am not, I'm not okay being here. And if you're, and that's hard to fess up to.
Yeah.
So that, I'm not okay being here. There's something still missing. I kept tuning into that and being brutally honest and then brutally meeting these moments of fear. And then what you learn and what I learned on my own path, what the more authentic path to a spiritual resolution and clarity and inner peace has to do with dismantling and breaking down as opposed to adding stuff to us. Oh,
that's such a great point, Stuart, right. Because I think that we think that we have to achieve. It's like a very goal-oriented thing if we want to get more connected spiritually. And it really is a paring down and a facing what's inauthentic, what's not connected to soul. That causes us to face certain illusions. And, that old expression, the truth hurts. I really don't think it's the truth that hurts us. It's the illusions, facing the illusions that we have been buying into as truth, that becomes the painful part of growth.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as we pare away what's not us on a deep level, what doesn't serve us, what gets left at that core?
That is the question, isn't it? When you're doing all this stuff and you're meeting shadow and it's causing a existential crisis in your life and it's causing all sorts of things to break down. I'm like, what have I done? you know, what is there that's good? What is left? And the answer to that is not, I'm not going to give a neat and clean answer to that. The answer to that is what is left is an integrated sense of self and ego and personality, integrated into what, however? Integrated into a deeper, truer nature, which is simply self-awareness. It's just awareness. It's your conscious, truest state, all the way sort of hidden back behind the layers of body, mind, emotion, that then it comes forward. So what is left after you dismantle personality and ego? I don't sell like, you know, there are others that do that. Oh, that's the end of personality. It's the end of ego. I don't sell that. I don't, that was not my experience. But ego and awareness shift. So when you begin the spiritual process, is a common metaphor I like to use. Way in the background is awareness, and out front is ego and mind. And you react to it, you're hot and bothered by it. It makes you judgmental. It, you know, at least all sorts of problems throughout the spiritual process. These things come closer and closer. You draw awareness closer and closer, and then they flip. Right. So here's ego mind. It's just now, it's still there. It's still part of you. It's just playing second fiddle to awareness. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's easier said than done. And it's also easier said than understood, because not everybody listening is going to have a tacit understanding or experience of awareness. What do you mean by awareness? What does that actually mean? This gets back to your question, what is left? And it's a tough one. It's like, the closest I think I've come to explaining what is left and what is awareness is this. There's most people have a, if you ask them, you know, throughout your life, when you were a little kid, when you were a teenager, when you were 20s or when you were 30s, is there a part that you can point to that has always been there that really hasn't changed? That's always been there that really hasn't changed. Like when you look inside and you say, ah, this is Jay Stewart, this is Christine, this is Ed, this is Sally. That part of you has remained the same your whole life. And that's exactly the part that in becoming a spiritual badass, that you draw out and that flips and gets put forward. And that part has no definition. It has no edges. It's empty. It's clear. It's aware. And it's always okay. That's the part that's there.
And I think about my own journey and that process, which is, of course, is a never-ending process, at least while in human form. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that I've had to face along the way is my attachment to certain definitions of self, roles that I've played, just belief systems about what I am, who I am. And it can be rather disconcerting. I know that years ago when I left a long-term marriage, I found myself kind of feeling like I'd gone from being in a motorboat with a GPS, you know, heading to shore, to like being on a raft, and it was getting kind of choppy out, and I'm just like busy hanging on, not even knowing if I was going to reach the shore, or if I did, what shore it would be. Yeah. And that's a rather disconcerting feeling, to not have a good 3D sense of self, so to speak.
Yeah. You have to leave the box. It's as simple as that. You have to step into a certain amount of paradox and mystery. If you really, really, truly, authentically want to take up the spiritual path and see it to its end, that is an inevitable part of it. Mm-hmm. That you leave the structured box where you have control, the structured box where you know what's going to happen minute to minute, day to day, because living in the moment, which is what we're talking about, right? We're talking about living in the present moment. It's full of surprise. And some of those surprises are not necessarily to your liking. right? Yes, COVID-19, for instance. So how do you, so they're not to your liking, but how can you still navigate them? How can you live with them and be with them? And that's the magic of discovering your own inner badass, is that in doing so, it's like you've discovered this island that you can always retreat to, even in the midst of a hurricane. Mm-hmm.
And I find it interesting that you call doing that being a badass, which I absolutely love. Yeah. And it happens to coincide with coming from a place of surrender. Mm. And I wrote a blog a couple of years ago, basically saying that we are evolving into a new kind of superpower. And that's the superpower of allowing, yeah, as opposed to the superpower, like the superpowers you see in the movies and read about in books, where there's like this outflow of doing, but rather we're having to hone our skills at surrender.
Yeah.
So how is that really being a badass?
Well, because it takes great courage to surrender completely. Because the set path of personality and mind really don't want to surrender. They have hundreds and thousands of years of evolution that's saying, you are this person, you are this personality, you're born into the world, and culturally we're taught that you're this, and you're going to become this, and this is your name, and this is your job, and this is who you are, and this is your family. And to divest yourself of all of that, to shed all of that, and to become something unknown, there's a tremendous amount of resistance will come up for that. So to really overcome that resistance takes a tremendous amount of courage, because when the rubber hits the road, what I'm talking about here is that fear arises. Fear arises, and there's different levels of fear that, you know, might just be personality, psychological fear, might be fear of quitting your job. And there's a whole other level of fear that when you really get involved in this work, that is an existential type of fear. In Spirituality for Badasses, I address it as your brain having an earthquake. When you make this flip, we can work with that analogy, the left brain, right brain analogy. Mm-hmm. When you flip from being dominant in your left brain to being dominant in your right brain, there's some rewiring that happens. And part of that rewiring is kind of going through a funnel, which is really scary, you know, of embracing this part of yourself. And yeah. I tell you what, I wish it wasn't. I wish there was some other way that you could get through the process without having these earthquakes in the brain, but they're just a natural part of the process. It's like you're, you know, another analogy I like to use, it's like you're this iceberg and you have a sense that you want to be water. But that iceberg has got to crack and crunch and crumble before you can become water. And that part, that process is indeed, that's the process of confronting the shadow, is it's scary, painful, requires some courage. And so once you go through it, though, you're like, yeah, that was just about the most badass thing I've ever done. Ain't nothing else going to be worse than that. You know, right. I just got my medal. Let me put it in another perspective. I have talked to some badass soldiers who are willing to walk through gunfire down a street. They're more willing to do that with shards of glass blowing everywhere than they are to confront their own internal badass nature. So the courage it requires is tremendous.
So what is it that people tend to fear, what is the fear that people have to break through in order to face the shadow? Yeah. Or the many shadows?
This is not a question that many people are, the answer of which are going to like. It's fear of death. It's fear of death. The death of who you think you are and the birth of who you really are. Fear of death, annihilation, end, period. and meeting that, that's, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, I think is not for sure about this, but there's a, you know, dying before you actually die, I think is a Christian saying or parable, where you meet death before your actual death. And that's what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Although
I know that there are meditation teachers who have taught, you know, basically going into your deepest fear, whether it's your own personal death or the death of a child or whatever, like just to dive deep into it, because it is that release that allows you to face the deepest fear and also open to that flow of spiritual guidance, spiritual connection.
Here's what I found out about meeting that fear, however, is that usually the mechanisms of one's own internal evolution really has, there's a governor switch or a valve that when you first get involved in spirituality, it's not going to be dumped on you. In other words, you aren't just necessarily going to meet this huge amount of fear until you've developed usually enough awareness to handle it, if that makes any sense. So that's usually what I have found. It's like when you're ready, that when you've done enough work, when you've become aware and mindful and you've had little earthquakes, then the mystery of evolution, which I have zero idea of how it works. Okay. The mystery of evolution steps in and says, okay, you're ready for a big one.
Yeah.
And I
think that the fear of death, of self, as you mentioned, and it, you know, I think that we also fear the physical death on some level, because part of our image of self, part of our definition relates to the tribes we belong to, right?
Yeah.
And so if we have to face self through shadow and also through connection, then we may have to disconnect from our tribe in a variety of ways. And for many people, the first disconnection is recognizing, hey, my family was kind of crazy, or I really didn't fit in. I don't fit in. For some, it might be, you know, the career you've chosen, whatever, but that disconnection from the tribe, or facing that we may not fit in with our tribe, you know, research has shown that triggers the same part of the brain as pain. It's like this survival mechanism that is ingrained in our DNA.
Yeah.
So how do we face kind of the integration in relationship with having to redefine our tribes?
It's a great question. And again, in this instance, there's also no easy answer. What happened to me, and I think what happens to a lot of spiritual seekers, is that, yes, indeed, in the beginning, you have to let go of some of your tribes, and it's painful. There's just no getting around it. That might be that there's family members that you're going to have less of a relationship with. You're going to have more of a surface relationship with. You're going to have a group of friends that, okay, I'm, you know, that group of friends that I meet at the bar, I'm done with them. The group of friends that I used to have my, you know, whatever get-togethers with, I'm done with them too. And then what happens is you meet a whole other group of friends on your spiritual search. And what's paradoxical here is that this group of friends, if they're true, if they're good, are also about transcending your identity with a group of friends. You follow me there? Go figure.
Yeah. And one of the things I've personally experienced is those people I've been really deeply connected to, who, you know, where we've sort of gone our separate ways, if they're evolved and I'm evolved, it's kind of like we see the perfection in it, because there's this sadness because there's some human attachment, and yet we know that for our own individuation on our soul's journey, that is a really important part. Letting go when it's appropriate is a really important part.
It never kind of stops. I've been involved in spirituality for decades now, And there's always, you're always shedding your identification and moving on and moving from tribes of friends to another tribe of friends. Mm-hmm. And it's just part of life. It's part of the roller coaster and the up and down of life. And I think that it becomes as spiritual connoisseurs that we, you kind of get used to it, and you become to expect it more. And it's a healthy thing, in my opinion. It's a healthy thing to have new interactions, new experiences. You let these go, you bring in new ones. That's part of evolving and growing. It's beautiful. Yeah.
And I think that the attachment, there's the attachment in terms of the psychological attachment that can be very healthy. But having the dysfunctional attachment where you're not willing to let go actually gets in the way of our evolution.
Yeah, sure.
So it's sort of a balancing act, but between like having our heart open and being attached through the connection, but not having so much attachment that we're not willing to let go when it's not serving us.
And now we're touching upon something which gets into the more intimate part of the spiritual process, which is that in order to do some of this work, you have to be in a safe space.
Good point.
Right? You have to be in a safe space. You have to trust. You have to be able to know that it's okay for your pain to come out in both a individual sense, but also with another, with a teacher or a coach or a group of people, is allowing that to, you need it. It takes a safe space for us to draw us out. And I certainly went through this. I had many, many teachers that I hung out with that just simply created a safe space where all my garbage was welcomed into the room. And it's sort of a balancing act. I like the teachers where, like, you know, there was a safe space, but they also weren't afraid to be, you know, they had the lion and the lamb personality. I like, and my book is sort of a crazy wisdom, Spirituality for Badasses. It's sort of a crazy wisdom. You get a lot of lion in it. Although I think readers will, find that there's a lot of charm and heart and humor in it as well. But it's finding that safe space where you can meet these fears, where you can hold hands with others who are also meeting their fears and have the confidence that it'll be okay. Uh-huh. That is an integral part of the spiritual badass process.
And when you're talking about teachers or groups or therapists for that matter, if we can get connected with people who can be aware of and be non-judgmental of our shadow, then it creates the environment, it creates the vibration, it creates the internal psychological perspective that we don't end up being so harsh on ourselves, because the things that we have in the shadow are there because we're so freaking judgmental of ourselves and that part of ourselves. So it's a great thing when somebody else isn't judgmental. It doesn't mean that they don't say, okay, get off your ass and go do something, or face this and move through it. Don't have such attachment to being stuck. But it's a great thing when somebody can see us and not like run the other way.
Yes. And it also allows you, when you're around someone who there's some patterning that takes place. In other words, when you're around either a teacher who has released a great amount of fear and limitation and ego, or you're around a group of other people who are interested in doing that, what that does is either consciously or unconsciously on a deep level, it resonates with you, and it sets up a position where you're able to, like a little duckling and mama duck, you're able to pattern off of that teacher and that group and that setting. And in Spirituality for Badasses, essentially, I'm taking the reader, you, as you read it, on this whole bunch of adventures that we meet. You know, we do all these wild and crazy things, everything from you know, going to a biker bar, to roller coasters, to zip lining into a canyon. We do all of these things. And the idea here, the idea of interaction and all this is for you, the reader, to be in that, to understand that, yeah, this is a crazy, wild adventure that you're going on, but it's okay. And I set up that patterning process for you where, like, wow, okay, this guy did it. And he experienced all the same fears and limitations that I did, but he did it. And I introduced you to other characters in the book, and they also did it. Mm-hmm. So it unburdens you of the feeling of being all alone.
Mm, yeah.
All, you know, which we're not.
So how can you tell if there's something in your shadow that's ready to be made aware of and processed?
Well, it'll make itself aware. It has a way of doing that where, you know, I think many of us have patterns that, our karma, essentially, that we repeat, right? These things that we do, and whether that's picking a bad mate or being argumentative and angry, or sticking your foot in your mouth at the family dinner over politics. We have these patterns that we repeat. And you'll know as you become more aware, you tend to start to see those patterns, and they slowly sort of come out. And then another, as I said before, another way that they come out is sometimes unexpected, where you have an earthquake, where a little chunk of that iceberg that I spoke about previously breaks off, and like, oh God, what was this? I didn't know that was there. And it's an unexpected thing that might show up. So how do you know what part of shadow? That's what sort of makes it tricky. It's part of the mystery of the process. You do the work as best as you can. Which is to, you know, just like, you know, listening to podcasts like this and reading books and hanging out with teachers. Do the work. And then it's a mystery as to how that, you know, when those fears or when those shadows are going to arise and they're going to present themselves to you, and you see, and you're able to see them. And sometimes you're able to see them on your own, but other times it takes a context. It takes the group of people, the people in the class and the teacher, to point it out to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially with patterns that aren't within the same context. Like, you know, if you keep picking a bad mate, then
yeah,
that like, it makes it very illuminated that there's something in our pattern that's like, it's off. But if it shows up in different areas of our lives, sometimes I think that it can be harder to see the pattern.
Sure. That's part of the process.
Yeah. So I think that you've mentioned mindfulness a few times.
Yeah.
How do you personally define mindfulness, and how does it help with this process?
Mindfulness is the is discovering a heretofore undiscovered and undervalued part of yourself that is this clear, aware, non-judgmental part. Mindfulness is discovering that and bringing it forward and learning to have access to that part 24 hours a day, where it just becomes automatic. So mindfulness is discovering some gold that you have already in your pocket, is what mindfulness is. So yeah, it's absolutely so that was a, you know, that was a very, very, very simple way of putting it. Mindfulness is also the type of mindfulness that I like to teach, and that I am interested in is more the neuroscientific MBSR, mindfulness based stress reduction mindfulness, which is, you know, taught in over 500 colleges and universities and hospitals in America right now. So that's it's a very, very big part of the process. And mindfulness, how can it help you, is that instead of instead of reacting to life, you with mindfulness, you respond to life very differently.
Mm, yeah. So what's some of the science behind this approach to mindfulness?
Sure. So in the 80s, if we want to go all the way back, I'll try to make this quick. Non-invasive medical technology, which is CAT scans, other methods to map the brain through, I'm forgetting the terms right now, but there's amongst them are CAT scans, brain scans, etc. Discovered, one particular doctor, John Kabat-Zinn, with the use of these non-invasive medical technologies, was able to scan the brain of a person before an 8-week mindfulness course and after. And lo and behold, mm-hmm. what he discovered was that the person's brain had become more resilient, had become healthier, had become showed less signs of stress in the amygdala part and in our old, reptilian lizard brain parts. Uh-huh. And so the neuroscience was able to map those areas through scientific research and tests and say, wow, this stuff really works. And then it kind of goes beyond that, even where and I'm no neuroscientist, I'll be the first to say, where it gets into where they've studied neurotransmitters and mm-hmm. all sorts of the inner workings of the brain, and they're being able to map it, see it, diagnose it better and better and better mm-hmm. each passing year.
Yeah. And I think about the left brain, right brain, which I understand scientifically, uh-huh. it's an oversimplification, yeah. but it seems to me that part of our spiritual evolution that includes the mindfulness piece has to do with the connection between the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain. So it's that back and forth communication.
Yes.
And it's almost like this receive act or like outward flow of intention or verbiage or whatever. It's kind of like this back and forth and back and forth. And to me, that kind of communication absolutely requires the mindfulness yeah. to be able to interpret what's coming through on a moment to moment basis.
Yes. I love the left brain, right brain analogy. I think that in a very simplified way, one could say that before being mindful, before waking up to your own spiritual badass nature, you're left brained. Mm-hmm. Then what happens, you're left brain dominant, I should say. And then what happens in this all we're talking about here is becoming right brain dominant. Mm-hmm. And right brain, if you look at the associations and the descriptors of being right-brained, one of them is indeed just being more open and aware and more in the sensing part of the the tactile part of the brain, where you're like your feeling nature, you feel the body physically, emotionally, is more of a right-brain thing. Mm-hmm.
So what's your daily practice like?
I don't really have one. I don't. I mean, I'm a bit of a iconoclast, I guess, in this sense, but if you talk to a lot of teachers, they'll give you the same answer. So I guess what I want to say when I get asked that question is that I got involved in spirituality because I was in pain. Mm-hmm. And I did all of those things. I meditated daily and I did mindfulness exercises and I sat with teachers and I did all of this work. And then what happened is the iceberg melted all of the way. And once that happened, the pain went away. And once the pain went away, there was no need to do anything more. So what happens is not only is there, Christine, a downside to seeking, but there's an end of seeking.
Yeah. So, and you know, I have to admit, I'm with you. I rarely like meditate or do something in particular because I feel like the name of the game is integration.
Yes.
And once you attain a certain level of integration, living life with that integration brings you deeper and deeper into integration. Yeah.
Everything becomes a meditation. Everything becomes a mindfulness exercise. Everything becomes a yogic interaction. And I mean, isn't that good news? Don't you want to hear that? Like, as a seeker, don't you want to hear? Yeah, I don't have to get up every day and neurotically, you know, practice my yoga postures and meditate for 2 hours. I mean, I'm 52. That's fine when you're in your 20s, but yuck, I wouldn't want to be, I don't have time for that, you know? So isn't it good news that you don't have to do that? That once you, let me put this in plain and simple language. Once you wake up, you've woken up.
Yeah.
Once you wake up, you're there, you know, you wake up. Now that's not to say, you know, because that can sound, when someone says that, that can sound really haughty and if you don't mind me saying so, shitty. It can it can sound like, oh, how do you say that with some sense of humility? Well, the way that you say that with humility is that I can totally tell you that I totally and completely have a fallible personality and ego, and ask my wife and my son. I am not claiming perfection. You know, what I'm saying that you no longer practice something daily is not a confession of that, of being a saint or anything. Yuck. That would be the last thing I want, you know?
And I think about like, if somebody cuts me off on the freeway, you know, I might swear at them and then I might laugh at myself for swearing and judging them. And then I might go to this place of compassion. It's like, maybe they're really late for a doctor's appointment maybe they're just living in a very unconscious way. And then it's like this a whole lot of stuff, self-awareness, and, you know, including the human judgment and then the self-judgment, the whole kit and caboodle in a few moments.
Yes.
And to me, that's being integrated.
Yes. It's like a cat. You know, your cat, when he gets scared or he gets pissed off, you know, like, instantly turns into a tiger, right? But then what happens with your cat? 30 seconds later, he's back to being a lovable, purring bundle of fur, right?
Yeah.
This is what mindfulness can offer us, is that you aren't getting rid of being the tiger. It's just that it's called emotional resilience. You know, you have you get, when it's okay to get angry and let yourself be angry, you know, and then what's going to happen is that you with mindfulness, you quickly turn back into a furry bundle of purr.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that analogy. I've got cats, so.
I've got cats.
So, before we, I don't want to run out of time here without talking about this. First of all, your book is called Spirituality for Badasses, right? How can people get it, and how can people connect with you, and what else do you offer in addition to the book?
Sure. So they can get it on Amazon. Just search Amazon. It comes right up, Spirituality for Badasses. You can go to my website, Spirituality for Badasses. And like, you know, many other teachers, I have an online video course, and I offer coaching. Simple as that. Right now I have just basically one-on-one coaching. You can go to my website and find out about those things. I do what a lot of us do who are passionate about these matters. And I just have a smorgasbord of ways that I try to help people as much as possible, and books and videos and one-on-one.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Spiritualityforbadasses.com. Okay, so at one point you were doing this wonderful analogy of the ego and the spiritual nature and kind of like, you know, shifting places. I know that one of the things that the ego absolutely fears is the fear of its death.
Yeah.
are we trying to kill the ego?
No, not at all. And I harp on this in the book quite a bit. There is no ego death is required. Excuse me one second. Sorry about this little technical stuff in the middle of our show.
No, okay. That's okay.
Thank you.
Live show. Yeah.
Yep. It seems, you know, to the ego, it seems like death, but the actual experience is just the ego shifting and getting out of the way. So this is why over the years, over the, you know, decades and centuries, it gets confused with ego death, complete annihilation of ego. This is my own personal experience and those who I hang out with. This has not been, ego annihilation is not what I found to be the truth in my spiritual search. And for many of the people that I hung out with, which were in Advaita, Neo-Advaita and non-dual and Zen schools, that was, many of them will say the same thing, where like ego gets displaced, but not necessarily annihilated. And then there's different, you know, people will argue that till they're blue in the face, you know, both sides of that. I can only argue my side, which is like, no, it really, I never found that to be, nor did I really want that actually.
Yeah. Me too.
I wasn't out for that, you know.
It just plays a different role and it's not the one in charge, at least.
Simple as that.
Most of the time it can take over the steering wheel of life sometimes.
Yeah.
But then it's like, no, you go sit in the back seat again.
Perfect.
Yeah. So let's talk about boundary setting, because I think that there are people who are on their spiritual journeys who don't understand the importance of setting very firm boundaries.
Yeah.
What's your perspective on boundaries?
An absolute must. In Spirituality for Badasses, one of the first things that I talk about is our predisposition to distraction. We live in a absolutely distraction oriented world where it's bought and sold and expected and applauded essentially. And what I'm talking about is, you know, in this particular instance and in the book is your phone. Mm-hmm. You know, so one of the things that I, you know, I get commonly asked, so you talk about, you know, I in the book I jokingly, you know, so you should delete all those social media apps on your phone, you know. Uh-huh. Yet I still have Facebook, and I do have Facebook. So I get asked, you know, well, you have Facebook, and I go, you know, how does that add up? And I'm like, well, I do have Facebook, and it's on my computer in my office down in the basement of my home. It's not on my phone. So there's your answer, boundary. I have created a boundary. I have created, when I do have my phone, my personal body and being is a no-fly zone, for social media interruption, for emails. Uh-huh. The only people that can text me or communicate to me are friends and family on my uh-huh. phone. So I've created a boundary there. And that's just one small uh-huh. example, but it's a big one, because you have to, in the spiritual process, in order to invite something in as large as what we are talking about, something has to move out of the way. Mm-hmm. So you've got to create these boundaries of like, okay, I'm not going to be dilly-dallying with my phone all day long. It's sucking my time and sucking my energy. Boundary. Mm-hmm. Another boundary. I'm not going to watch all that junk TV. That's another boundary. Mm-hmm. Another boundary. I'm not going to eat crap food because it's just making me sluggish and tired all the time. Another boundary. Yeah, there's this. It's a great question, Christine. And we have to have we got to become an adult and know when to set those boundaries.
And we need to set those boundaries with other people too.
Oh, absolutely.
I posted something on social media because I thought it was an important thing to think about. And it was somewhat controversial. I'm not even going to get into what it was. Hmm. And I sort of let things flow in the comments for quite a while, because I knew it would create divisiveness and I wanted there to be an exchange. I wanted to see what people thought, but really I wanted people to interact with each other. And it got to be bullying. It got to be name calling. And I was kind of shocked. And it's like, okay, yeah. You know, there's some people I've got to block here because they're misbehaving. And you know, that's just social media. In our own lives, sometimes we have to say bye-bye to people because they're sucking our energy or they're misbehaving in our lives. So those external boundaries that I think some of us think, oh, well, if I'm just all lovey-dovey to people, I should just allow. It's like, no, it's like our energetics are sacred and we need to keep it clear.
Yes. I had a friend to cite an example that was just that. He wanted to borrow. This is over a decade ago. It was, can I borrow this? Can I have that? Can I take, et cetera, et cetera. And there was already some, his personality was kind of angular and tough to be around, but there was a part of him that I really, really kind of liked, admire. He had a great sense of humor. He was very forthright. But what happened is the toxic qualities of his personality began to overshadow the good parts of his personality. And it's at that point I said, boundary, done. And I had to cut off that. And it hurt. You know, that the part of me that really liked this individual was sad that I had to let that individual. But the other part of me that didn't want any to do with the toxic parts was happy. I'm glad to have moved on. So yeah, it's hard to do, but it's a must.
Yeah. So we've just got a few minutes left. Okay. Do you want to leave our listeners and viewers with, some final messages in the next 3 minutes or so?
Well, let's talk about laughter and humor. Because that's so big. You want instant enlightenment, just laugh a little bit. You want to instantly transcend your ego and your personality, laugh a little bit, find a way to laugh. And I think we already do that. So much of our, talking about social media again, is, so much of that is about laughter. But what I want to specifically point out is that laughter is also a beautiful thing and an okay thing. When you're really getting in deep into the stuff of spirituality, it's good to have that there. It's good to laugh at it, to see, and that's not necessarily easy. I think I've made it easy.
Sorry, something went wrong. Please try again.
No, that's all right. See, laughter. Sorry, something. I think somebody's shadow. Just that was a message from someone's shadow right there. I think that's what that was. So, laughter and humor was just perfect. Is so important, and I think, here's what I want to say with this. I loved writing and creating Spirituality for Badasses because it's got a lot of humor in it. It's got a lot of unexpected, it's potty mouthed, it's irreverent, it's on the edge. And I loved doing that because that's who I am too. You know, I'm potty mouthed and irreverent and on the edge. And here's what I want to say to everyone out there listening to this is that if you get involved in spirituality, whether it's your yoga teacher or a mindfulness teacher, or a set of books or or interacting with a new group of people, sure as hell make sure that they have a sense of humor.
Yes. And one of the things that I've said about my guides whom I'm connected with on a regular basis, they have a great sense of humor and they don't take me too seriously. I shouldn't either.
Right. Yeah. I think there's a positive sense of self-deprecation is what I'm talking about here. Like, if you can't laugh at your own crap, then, and you can't have a teacher that invites you to laugh at your own crap or a group of people that also laugh at you. I mean, what a beautiful thing. That's such a great way to, because you're going to be doing a lot of crying, trust me.
Jay Stuart Dixon, spiritualityforbadasses.com. Thank you so much for joining us here today. Love what you have to say about integrating our spiritual nature into our physical realm. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine.
And thank you all for joining us. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you'd like to empower yourself to step further into your vibration of change, please visit my website at christineupchurch.com, where you can learn more about my insights, upcoming events, and private sessions.